Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Hello? This is Ilana. Can you hear me? Hello?
Unmuted. Are you live? Can you hear me?
I'm live. I can hear you. Yeah. Kenneth?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there we go. Is Brett not going to be on the show? Is that what we're dealing with
here? No, he is. I don't know what's going on with the phone.
Ah.
I know we set up the Google community page.
I know he had trouble getting on to last time.
Yeah, he did. I don't know.
I guess theoretically we can go ahead and start without him if we have our topics lined up.
This is true. He does such a nice host to send off. I don't really know what's going on.
Technical difficulties, that's what we are experiencing at the moment.
Did you have a chance to read Rust?
Yeah, I read it last week before the previous show.
Oh.
Why don't you go ahead and say what you thought about it, and then I'll respond after that since I haven't...
Sure, so Rust is an all-ages comic. I don't know when it came out. By Oni Press. It's interesting. It's a sort of alternate timeline post World War II-ish rural setting at a farm. Ah, there we go. Hey.
I'm sorry. Skype, I don't know what the hell is up with this last week and this week, but, like, Skype's not cooperating and my mic's not playing, and, yeah, I probably should troubleshoot that when we're not trying to do a live show.
Well, we're all here now. I was just doing a really lousy job of trying to explain Rust.
It's cool. There's a second volume coming out this week. But, yeah, it's like a alternate kind of, like, World War II-ish steampunk sort of thing. It's a good all-ages book, and then it's going to be a motion picture, a major motion picture coming up, I think. So there'll be a lot of it.
Who's making it?
I absolutely don't know. It's a good question.
You know, the thing that's interesting about this being all-ages is I was reading it, and, like, it's super decompression land, the comic. I mean, it's very atmospheric. It's easy to care about the characters and their struggles, and they're really likable and they're really sweet, and you want all the best things in the world for all the characters. But the comic is so slow and so decompressed, and the tone is so somber. I can't imagine wanting to read this if I was a kid. Would you guys have read it when you were a kid?
No. It definitely. It's interesting. It's like I'm rereading it with the second volume coming. It kind of, like, I haven't seen the movie in a long time. It reminded me of Iron Giant a little bit, which was, I thought, also, like, a little somber. And
I really didn't like sad stuff when I was a kid. I was very, very sensitive. And I'm like, I can't imagine actually reading this when I was young, you know. But it's a creative world that they created. And I want to give hugs to everybody who lives there, you know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, but it's an interesting one. Is it's actually gotten a lot of praise out in, like, reviewers and just general, like, really well-regarded book. It's an all-ages option that's out there for folks. A little bit older all-ages, but...
Mm-hmm. What did you think, Kenneth?
I see, I thought you said Ghost, so I haven't read Rust, so...
Oh! Well, I'm happy to talk about Ghost.
Yeah, well, you can talk about that or if you need to. I just don't know. I didn't read it, so I don't know.
Oh, actually, one last thing about Rust, though, guys. Is this level of decompression, is this normal to kids these days, what with their manga and whatnot? With their manga and their Carly Rae Jensen, is this normal for kids now?
That's a good question.
I'm wondering if maybe that's why it works for them. I don't know.
See, I think it would be the other. The kids would want, like, really whiz-bang, like, quick cuts, not a lot of detail, more action.
Yeah,
I think it would be the exact opposite.
I know. So I'm trying to figure out what's the connection there. I do think that they sometimes do some of that in manga. I mean, I know that the kids like manga, so I'm sort of like, is that somehow... related, I don't know. The art's interesting and very atmospheric.
Yeah, I love the art. I think the art's so just gorgeous in the book.
Yeah.
But on to Ghost, since we wanted to talk about it last week, but we didn't get a chance.
Yes. Do you want to start off giving the overall rundown of the series for folks who are unfamiliar?
Sure. I'll give a little bit of history, too. So Ghost.
Please.
Ghost is... Do you actually know the history, like, the old school, or you want to just give the rundown?
No, I want the history, because I told you I had been under the impression when I was younger that it was a TNA book, and I was wrong, so I would like someone to educate us about the history.
So, back in the 90-ish, Dark Horse Comics wanted to do a superhero line of comics, and it was dubbed the world's greatest comics. It was Ghost X. I don't remember what the hell else. That's how memorable it was. Ghost and X are about the only two things that stood out, even to this day. So it's been about 20 years since the last of them saw print. Ghost was one of the longest-running series of it. So the second volume's up to the second issue. And basically, it's a mystery of this woman who we don't know quite what happened. She doesn't know what quite happened. A nice updated of a Reality Stars wannabes kind of basically conjure this ghost who somehow also can fire guns like a badass and go through walls and kick ass and do the death heart touch like Temple of Doom. And it's a pretty kick-ass character but written by Kelly Sue DeCormick, who also does Avengers Assemble. So I actually dig it. Like, I think the art's really cool and the story so far has been intriguing. Gets me to come back.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, what's interesting to me is I'm not sure where I got the impression that it was a TNA book, because looking at the character's costume, it's not Starfire. So it must have been something about just the way the characters were done on the covers or something. I don't know. Some sort of weird signal to my brain. It's like, that's not something I want to check out. But I've really, as soon as I saw the cover of the new series, which was by, you know, the artist by Phil Noto, who is ridiculously talented, beautiful art, I was like, okay, I'm interested. I read issue 0, 1, and 2. I like the book. It's a very different tone than a lot of things. Although it does remind me in some moments about some things about Batwoman, actually, now that Batwoman has become so sort of mythological, horror-oriented. And the art is continually beautiful. Phil Noto is aware that people have more than one face shape. I have had a bit of a hard time telling the mayor apart from our protagonist. Like, I feel like maybe the protagonist needs to be a bit more wrinkly because he's supposed to be older. But it certainly ended on a cliffhanger. I really need to see issue 3 now. It's an interesting story. I mean, it's combining sort of a urban gangster history with a contemporary politics and Greek mythology in the same book. And noir. It's very, very noir. So I don't know. That's a lot of things to be at the same time, but it's really hitting all those notes. And, you know, because it's dealing with some contemporary politics in the city. I don't want to spoil something, but anybody who reads the book will know that I happen to think that the current mayor of Chicago and the mayor of Chicago in this comic have a lot in common, actually. That would be my opinion of Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And then it also looks like it's some earlier crimes that might have happened, like the 30s or 40s or some such. Starting in the second issue is when it really begins to talk about the Greek mythology aspect of it. But it's unclear to me at this point whether that's all somebody sort of comparing their life to Greek mythology or if there is actually a connection between that world and the world that's existing now in the story.
I'm going to say that I didn't like it as much as either of you did. It's not that I didn't think it was bad or anything like that. And at times I really liked the art. Other times I was just kind of ho-hum on it. And the story was kind of the same way. The biggest thing is that it didn't really grab me in any way, so it's not something I would keep reading just because I didn't identify with any of the characters or the plot or anything like that. And the art wasn't great enough that I would come back just for the art. So I probably wouldn't keep reading it at all, but it wasn't terrible or anything like that. And there were a couple of reveals, like one in each of the first two issues, that I think were supposed to be more like scary or something like that, that just made me laugh out loud, although they were kind of a little ridiculous.
What one of those is without it being too spoilery? I'm curious.
Well, the second one I can tell you because there's a pumpkin. It was a pumpkin. That just made me laugh out loud. And I don't know if I was supposed to laugh out loud, but I audibly laughed or you could hear it in the other room. And I don't know if that was intentional or not.
I did not laugh. I thought that was cool.
It just seemed kind of ridiculous to me, but, you know, it's probably, I was already not liking it that much before then, so maybe that kind of, like, clouded my judgment on that one, so, but, again, it wasn't terrible, and if there are people that stuff's more up their alley, they probably would like it, because it's relatively well done, it's just, there's nothing in there that grabbed me personally.
It's interesting is that, like, I mean, it's been 20 years, so there's a big thing. It's kind of fascinating. I can't help but thinking when I read it is there's a thing with pop culture and that it's on a 20-year cycle. So, and it's about, you know, when it comes into to movies, they tend to oftentimes look at things that were like 20 years ago, clothes 20 years ago. And it's been 20 years for these books, and it's just following the cycle, and it looks like Dark Horse might be moving back with the superhero thing, which I thought was kind of interesting since it kind of basically failed spectacularly last time. So them trying it again I thought would be is going to be really interesting. I think X is the next one will be will have a book in or have a story in Dark Horse Presents, which is what they did with Ghost, was a story at Dark Horse Presents. So I imagine there's going to be a comic coming out soon with them for that book. But
using the name X for anything that's not X-Men related seems like misguided. And I know they've had that name claimed for a long time at this point, but I just can't keep that straight in my head.
It's funny. Speaking of 20 years ago, when John Byrne's X-Men came out, I was like convinced that it was a new X-Men book.
He wanted you to think that. I think he wanted you to think that.
Oh, I'm sure. And if he did, it was, you know, very smart of him. But yeah, it's kind of anytime I think of X, anything. Yeah, it just doesn't seem right unless there's mutants running around.
Yep.
So what else we got? We want to dive into like the big controversy and hubbub for the week.
Oh God. Yeah.
How DC Comics pissed that in your Cheerios?
I really think DC Comics is trolling me at this point. Like, I don't really know what else to say. Somebody commented on the Mary Sue. They're like, oh, next they're going to fire G.H. Williams. Like, they're just trolling this at this point. I think that they have in their head a vision of exactly what their product should be and exactly who should be purchasing it. And that vision is remarkably limited, not going to grow, ridiculously stupid, and that's what they're aiming to achieve. I don't understand the leadership. I feel like maybe I shouldn't be assuming that they pushed out Karen Berger, but they have been actively trying to move more of the Vertigo characters into the DC universe. They were probably, I can't imagine how they weren't just pushing her out. You know, I feel like if she hadn't been pushed out, she would have been doing more public relations around leaving and how I'm going to be doing X, Y, and Z now, you know, like something like that. I felt like it feels to me, and I'm woefully not connected to this story enough to feel like I should be saying anything, but it feels like she must have been pushed out, right? We know Gail Simone was fired by an email from the highly popular Batgirl book. So all I can assume is that they've, you know, declared some sort of like war on women in comics. I can't figure out what else it could possibly be at this point. It's just nutty.
So to back up the story for everyone.
I'm sorry?
I said back up the story for everyone who might not know what the hell is going
on.
Oh,
yes, I'm sorry. So the editor of Vertigo, a longtime editor of Vertigo Comics, the person who brought us Sandman and Swamp Thing and Hellraiser and Transmetropolitan and basically every book that you read or did read in the 90s, the person who brought us all of that is no longer running Vertigo. She also was a female type person. And then the other piece of news is that Gail Simone, the writer of Batgirl, was rather unceremoniously fired from the book through an email. And the book apparently has been really, you know, well, sold really well. Some folks were thinking that, you know, they brought Gail on to launch the book because they thought that, you know, it was bad enough that people were making Barbara Gordon no longer be Oracle and, like, erasing one of the only visible people with a disability in comics. So they were like, well, you have to have, like, at least a woman who, like, all those complainy lady folks like write the comics so that they'll stop protesting about this.
now that the comic is solidified, it's time for us to hand it over to one of the great visionaries. You know, like the people who are having to do everything else already. They'll probably just give it to Rob Liefeld at this point. I don't know.
Somebody, an interim writer, but no permanent's been done.
So who's the interim writer? Who's the interim writer?
Ray Fox is the name. He's done a lot of more indie books. One Soul for Oni is the one thing that really sticks out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good book. Not quite what I had envisioned for someone writing Batgirl, but he's a talented writer. He's actually a really good writer. So there's at least that consolation.
I think people are going to stop buying the book. I just don't.
I plan on buying the book.
I just don't see how, I don't see where this editorial decision is coming from. I mean, I have to be honest, I don't think her run on Batgirl has been as good as what she had been doing before they threw everybody off their game with the whole relaunch. You know, I think Secret Six was some of the best shit ever. I think that her Birds of Prey was really fantastic. I don't think Batgirl was as good as that. But Batgirl was good, and it was better than most of the stuff they were doing, and it was certainly selling, and I can't imagine why they would fire her in such an unprofessional manner. It's just beyond me.
Yeah, so I mean, to me, the thing that I think is really messed up on it is the firing over the email. She's given a year. She's for just this title. She did Secret Six for 36 issues.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Something like that. So that's 3 years
mm-hmm.
of her time.
Yep.
She's made people love Barbara Gordon and care about so many characters that they normally just didn't care about or you'd call second tier. Beyond talented writer, one of the most well-known female creators, and then one of the most beloved creators, period, in the comic industry, both
yep.
fans and professional. Like, I've never heard anything negative about her, only positive and tons of praise. You at least call the person. I think firing anyone through email is just a wimp, spineless thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also interesting is, like, there's massive shakeups going on with the DC creative teams. Jim Zub, who we had on the show a while ago, he's taking over Birds of Prey. Scott Snyder went on the offensive as far as PR and said that he's leaving Swamp Thing with issue 18, but that was planned. They've got, you know, old comics being dropped, new comics coming in. I'm trying to think what else. There's a whole bunch of different creative stuff going on. It's just bizarre to me that, like, Batgirl is one of the better selling comics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quite.
I don't know.
It makes
yeah.
you wonder a lot about what's, like, the people over there are the people in charge over there, if they have any kind of clue about what they're doing. I was reading a pretty good article, and I'll send it to you guys later, post it or whatever, on the top 10 worst moments in DC Comics history, and the top 7 are all people that are currently in leadership at DC, most of it. Some of it you could quibble about, but it's crossovers and recent event things and stuff like that that just were really bad for DC. So it's like, and it seems like the guy in charge now is responsible for a big part of what that crap is. And so it's like, does he have any clue what he's doing? And I'm not sure that he does. So.
Yeah, I don't think they know what's good anymore. Like, I think that they've lost, they just don't understand what good comics are. So they're trying to push for things that are bad now. That's
well,
the only conclusion I can draw. I don't know why Warner Brothers is letting them get away with it, to be honest.
Warner Brothers, I mean, so one, there's all kinds of rumors. I mean, a certain site keeps on reporting that there's all kinds of editorial interference with the creators, which doesn't shock me at all, which means it's like the editorial really calling the shots and not the creators.
It seems like that's been going on for several years.
Yeah, and then And then with Warner Brothers, I mean, they just look at, like, the bottom line, and it's not hemorrhaging money. They're looking at it as a engine to create properties from, you know, future movies, television, or whatever. But, I mean, there's the famous, I mean, there's so many interesting things when it comes to Warner Brothers and the DC relationship. Warner Brothers, I think it was like late 70s, mid 70s, somewhere around there. Warner Brothers was like, hey, we should make, you know, get the rights for Superman and make a movie. And a lawyer came back and was like, well, it turns out we actually own the rights to Superman because we own DC. So Warner, I don't think, is totally on the ball as to what the hell is going on.
No, they're not. They're not on the ball. Apparently, DC isn't interested in making money. It's very confusing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's bizarre. It's like, there's so many other comics and, you know, creative teams that probably should have been fired by now.
They keep rehiring everybody who made the 90s bad.
Yes. Oh, my God, yes. Because, well, I mean, the others, all the guys that are in charge are the ones that, like, really pushed the 90s.
Yep. And it just seems to me strange that there's nobody at Warner Brothers who's familiar enough with comic books to remember that these are all the people who made the 90s full of fail. And to be like, oh, that might be a bad idea. Whoa.
The 90s better than the decade I stopped reading comics?
I mean, the thing is, what we know was good in the 90s in comics, Vertigo! Like, that was it, right? The 90s was when everybody stopped reading everything except for Vertigo and, like, maybe some of the X-books. Maybe. So, oh, and I guess there was all that Image thing, but, like, DC should understand, like, what it's doing here is completely misguided. And I don't know why they would mess up with an existing title. Some people think that, Gail Simone was going to introduce a transsexual character. Actually, I'm not sure. She just said transgendered, left it very open. There would be a transgendered character in the story that's obviously not going to be happening now. I don't know. Were they tired of all the good press that Marvel was getting for being LGBT friendly? Were they tired of that? They didn't want to see that happening for themselves. I'm unclear about that. But some people are thinking that that might have something to do with them axing her.
It'd be interesting. Like, I got pure, like, only speculation. I mean, from what I can tell, the Bat editorial staff is very hands on and have a clear direction as to what they want. So I don't know. And now that's rumors that have come out of various sites. But, yeah, I mean, it just confuses me. I mean, the good is she looked like she was moving towards indie comics anyways. So hopefully she will do what so many other creators have done and hop over to, or have Image produce or, yeah, publish whatever big things she has down the pipeline. She actually had a Kickstarter project called Leaving Megalopolis that got funded that I'm, like, can't wait to read. But I'm sure you'll see it. I'm sure that will be out by Image at some point.
You know, I mean, I'm sure in some ways it's good for her because she'll be focusing on creator-owned properties, and hopefully that'll be a less exploitative model for creativity. But as a fan, I want to read her writing villains and heroes that I know already, and having those books about characters who I like be written by her and not by people who are sucky. So, Well, it looked like somebody from Dark Horse was already trying to woo her on Twitter. Like, I think somebody on Dark Horse was saying, like, you know, you want to write Star Wars. I have to say, I've never read a Star Wars comic, but if Gail Simone wrote it, I would definitely pick up at least one issue.
It would be interesting. Brian Wood is actually writing a Star Wars comic. It's supposed to be out relatively soon. But
yeah,
I mean,
Marvel's,
like,
smart. Marvel will just pick her up right away, too.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, if out of anyone that should be right now dialing her phone incessantly, would be Marvel.
Absolutely. They would get a ton of goodwill from the fans. No, yeah, here's this tweet I found. Dark Horse Comics says to Gail Simone, come over to the dark side. We have cookies and high fives. Don't mind the awkward dude with the helmet who breathes kind of funny.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
So, There you go. Yeah.
So it's
this wall of silence, this absolute wall of silence from DC, the refusal to engage with the fans. Very, very old fashioned of them, not with the times.
Well, let's say she's like completely leaves DC, she doesn't do anything for them. What would you want to see her do? Like, what other characters would you want to see her take on?
Oh, what a lovely question. Spider-Woman. Yes, Spider-Woman. She could also do a fantastic book. Yeah, it would be fantastic. Or she could do I'd love to see her take over Thunderbolts, you know. That would be fun. She knows how to do a good villain book. Those would be two of the top things on my list, absolutely. You know, I mean, I'm sure everybody's going to just mention the names of various popular female heroes from Marvel Land, but Spider-Woman especially, I just think that would be a fantastic combination for her. She'd probably write a really good Wolverine, too.
Yeah, I was thinking I'd like to see, like, someone that's, like, in the kind of the mid-range of popularity for Marvel, not, like, one of the biggest ones, just because you're kind of constrained with what you can do with that, but like one of those, like someone like Spider-Woman, you know, she's been in a bunch of big books, but she hasn't been super high profile in recent years, and you could do a lot more with her than you could do with someone, you know, like Captain America, where they've probably got his future plan for 3 or 4 years. So that would be
that's true.
Something I would like.
Yeah.
Would like Thunderbolts, because I really hate the new Thunderbolts, but that's just me.
You know she'd write the fuck out of that. That's like her milieu. So.
I love Thunderbolts under Luke Cage, and the revamp looks terrible. I've read the first issue, and I'm really not happy about it. So.
Oh, really? I haven't tried.
Well, you can go on the crappiness of that book, but...
looks like they turned it into X-Force without mutants. So. Like Punisher and a lot of my least favorite characters, so...
Yeah, Punisher is pretty much my least favorite character, too.
Yeah. I hate Punisher. I don't really like Elektra. Some of the other characters are okay, but, I'm not. I probably will stop reading Thunderbolts now after having read it, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years. I'm probably not going to read it anymore, so.
I we want to move on to that. I called Thunderbolts the worst of the relaunch.
Wow.
I could agree with that so far.
Wow, that's pretty heavy.
I hated that the new Deadpool, so that says something. If I completely hated the Deadpool and...
Oh, interesting. So tell me why you hated the new Deadpool. I haven't read it.
So for me, like, I think the best gift Deadpool was Uncanny X-Force, where he's slightly nuts. He's more, like, mentally off. He's not this goofy, wacky character. And that's what this Deadpool is, and that's just not the type I like. So it's clearly personal tasting. Like, that's not the stories I generally like when it comes to Deadpool. To me, his run in Uncanny, or his betrayal on Uncanny X-Force is exactly what I like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I would add to that, I mean, that you can do the wacky Deadpool right, but 9 out of 10 people who try it fail at it. It's really difficult to do, and most of it fails, especially since they had so many people doing it in the last 2 or 3 years where they had, like, 20 different Deadpool series. Almost none of them are any good, because it's really hard to write the wacky Deadpool good, and only, like, a serious comedic writer should be trying to do it, because it's, you know, for him to work in that role, he has to be funny. And if he's not funny, it's just stupid. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is the pitch of the comic. Deadpool is fighting reanimated zombie presidents. Like,
that sounds like a good premise, to be honest.
it's an interesting premise. It's really just not one that appeals to me. So, I mean, that's just, it really is my taste versus anything. Like, I'm sure people will love it, but I was not one of them.
Well, I will say that the best of the, again, 8,000 Deadpool series they put out in the last 3 or 4 years. The best one was Deadpool, Merc With A Mouth, which was a zombie-themed comic, he went over into the Marvel Zombies universe quite a bit in that, and it was kind of silly and over the top and done really well, and had the series of greatest covers I've ever seen on any comic, where it was Ed Poole's zombie versions of famous movie posters, so like Jaws and different stuff like that, and it's all Deadpool zombie-related covers, and they're really, really good. And that series is really good. Almost everything else has been pretty bad in recent years, so I'm not super excited about the new one. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, see, I remember Merc with the Mouth, too, and I actually really liked that one. Like, the tone, it was funny, it was goofy, but it wasn't slapsticky Three Stooges.
Yeah.
I mean, it was somewhat... You know, what are, the Deadpool I kind of like is the cheesy 80s guy who kicks in the door and makes some goofy comment while he's killing everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Put that in the crazy.
Well, it seems to me that there's, like, also there's kind of a direct relationship in how good Deadpool is written and how many other characters he has to play off of. If he's the lead, it's almost always bad. If he's bouncing off of 3, 4, or 5 other characters who have, like, existing personalities, like in, Uncanny X-Force, then he's much easier to write because you don't have to fill a joke every panel and that type of thing, and he can be, that's what I've seen, at least, so.
You know, when I was reading his series back in the 90s, you know, when they had the whole Death of Deadpool thing, and he had this Weasel was his gadget guy, Deadpool was absolutely the lead character in that book at the time, and it was hilarious. So I think it is a reflection of the quality of the writing. You know, is the writer really funny or not?
Well, I think part of it might be, too, that, you know, it's since he's been in so many different issues now, it's much harder to write new stories like they did then. You know, then you got a lot more, you know, palette to work with. Now they've kind of used up most of the ideas, it seems like, so.
Yeah, that could be true. They can't always have him firing a rocket launcher out of a sheep. It only works when you're, you know, doing an assassination in Greece. Otherwise, you just fix it once and all.
I think you can always have him doing that personally, but that's just me.
Oh. That's what I'm saying, though. That was the classic to me. That was the classic Deadpool stuff. Yeah, it was Joe Kelly. It was Joe Kelly's run. Yeah, I'm pretty damn sure it was Joe Kelly's run.
I truthfully haven't read much of that, so I don't even know.
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah,
I don't know. Off the top of my head, but
to me, that's the writing I liked of it. Like, that sort of stuff was, I didn't think, the more entertaining. But yeah, I mean, to me, there's one of those things where they've done so much at this point. Like, how slapsticky and off the wall can we make this character? But as far as the rest of the new Marvel now, nice transition. Like, what else have you guys read? What are you thinking? What do you think has hope, and what are you probably going to be dropping soon?
I bought SF, which I had threatened to do last week and then didn't. I bought SF, which is Matt Fraction, written, drawn by Mike and Laura Alred, and it is so much fun. And it makes me wonder, damn, should I really, maybe I should have been picking up all those Fantastic Four books I hadn't been picking up in the name of being frugal. Perhaps that was a mistake, because the book is really fun and fanciful and creative, and I like the characters, and it seems like an interesting concept, and the art, of course, is really neat. I really think he has a good aesthetic for his work. It's really unique, and it's really attractive, and it's funny. I like it a lot. I couldn't get the AR app to work, though. I even, like, handed it off to Frank in frustration, like, can you make the thingy go? You know, like, that's what you do to your you know, fiancé, is you were like, hey, make the thingy go. And he couldn't make the thingy go either. Have you guys tried the AR app?
No.
I did for the Avengers X-Men stuff.
And did it work? Could you make the thingy go?
It's really temperamental.
Hmm. What was
it's
the secret
really
to making it work?
Steady hands and willingness to sit there for quite a while with your camera or your phone not moving.
With your and what does it do when you make it do that? What happens?
So when you put your phone over like wherever the AR is, and it has to be in generally a very specific area, and then it will like you'll start seeing a circle start going around, and then a video will pop up.
How do I know
what
area it is?
And it's where it's at the little AR. It'll say the AR thing in the corner.
So it's right next to the little AR thing. I totally did that. I totally did that, guys. And the thing will pop up, and it'll be all popping up and whatnot.
Mm. Yeah, and then, like, a video will play, or it was always some video crappy animation thing with every single one that I went to.
Oh, video. Interesting. Have I... Okay, well, now I know. I continue to waste minutes and minutes and minutes of my life trying to make FF issue 1. Pop up and do the thingy. Is anybody else reading FF right now?
I read it.
I
liked it. So to answer your question, you don't need to go back and read the original run of FF.
Okay.
You're probably better off not doing it, because the original run of FF for however many issues it ran is really plays off of Fantastic Four, and you'd have to go back to like the beginning of Jonathan Hickman's run to have a clue as to what the hell's going on.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those, like, so Hickman's really good at putting out these story threads that literally go on for like 3 years.
And it's really good.
I was going to say, I was reading, and even reading them issue by issue, I was sometimes confused because it was such this big tapestry, but the writing, the characters are brilliant in every single issue, and I'd actually say the new FF number one would be in the pure quality of the issue itself worse than any of the previous run of FF. Like all 23 issues would be better than this one. Not that this one's bad, but just that work that Hickman was doing is so good, and I think the art I like, but I don't think he's quite as good as what's been going on. But you really do have to read every issue of FF and every issue of Fantastic Four for the last 2 or 3 years back to back, like in one sitting. There's so many threads you just can't keep up with it. So
wow,
it's kind of amazing. I put it up there with Brubaker's run on Captain America as like one of the best runs of any comic in like the last decade.
Definitely the best I'd say it's the best Fantastic Four run ever. But
I mean, other than maybe some of the original like Kirby type stuff, like I mean, it's up there as one of the best ever for Fantastic Four. But yeah, it's. So can we even go into everything that happened with Hickman's run? Because I don't know, the thing I don't know is how much any of that's going to play into the new stuff with Fraction with FF.
Yeah, I'll definitely keep reading the new one. I like the first issue, but I'm just used to something so drastically different that it was a weird transition, so.
Yeah. So that was my thing, too, was it was such a... It's not that the new FF is bad in any way. It's just so different than what was previous that it was a little jarring. I'm just interested in the direction. Like, I don't know where it's going to go or what's going to happen next. Like, the main Fantastic Four is clearly, to me, Marvel's attempt to do a Doctor Who-esque sort of story, and that's fine.
Yeah, very transparently so, actually.
Yeah, and it's fine, because that's what Fantastic Four should be, you know, going through space and time and having crazy adventures. FF, I have no idea what to expect.
I will say the one thing that did really well to carry over into that first issue is the kind of the madcap cast of all the different characters. And maybe, if anything, they had a little more personality in this first issue just because there's so many of them, and that was good. And so that carryover, and that was just kind of like the backdrop in most of the other stories with this big cosmic stuff going on all around it, and you have all these various different funny characters in the background, and so that they've maintained so far, which is a very good thing, because that was one of the key things that made FF enjoyable, and to a lesser extent Fantastic Four, since they weren't featured as much in those issues, but it's good stuff. I'll keep reading it.
Well, so this is a good one. So, along with the FF, like, did you go through it, like, understanding the characters? Because I thought it laid out the characters really well for new readers, but me being an old reader, I have no idea if it actually did.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I still sort of like, you know, who's Alex Power? Like, the people I'm most confused by are the kids that seem like normal kids. Like, how did they happen to be there? Like, Alex Power and the girl with the African name, which is escaping me. Like, how are these normal kids here? And what is their relationship to these floating heads in jars, you know?
That I can explain very quick.
Oh, please
Alex
do.
Alex Power's the Power Pack. The old, like,
oh.
80s, 90s. He's,
okay.
He's one of the Power Pack
yeah.
kids.
Okay.
And the other kid, Bentley Brent, something like that, whatever his name is, he's a clone
yeah.
of the Wizard, the supervillain, the Wizard, the old Fantastic Four villain.
Yeah,
he's a clone.
I gathered that. He clearly was not a normal kid.
And then and he was actually very funny in that issue, funnier than he had been in previous issues. And then the girl is from Wakanda and just joined the group, and so she's... You don't know anything about her because nobody knows anything about her. So.
Oh. Okay.
They did a thing at the end of Fantastic Four. They went to Wakanda to deal with something with Black Panther, and she was there playing with the kids, and then they're like, hey, why don't you come to our school? And she's just like, okay.
Oh, okay.
I think she's part of the royal family, but I don't remember the full detail
okay.
of it.
Got
but
it.
To go back to what Brent was saying, that, you know, I started reading Fantastic Four and FF after they had most of these characters, and so I think that FF number one did a better job of explaining these characters than anything in the last 3 years. It was just kind of like you had to just gather how they got all these people. Like, I remember the Dragon Man as a villain. I don't know how they changed him and all that stuff, so I missed all this stuff. And so this part, mm-hmm. this issue would probably explain those extra characters better than any previous one, so at least to me. So
it looks like they're playing the Dragon Man off almost like he's Beast or something. But yeah, he used to be just an android, and he wasn't really sentient in a human sort of a way. It was like having a wild animal, you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't evil. He just was, like, going to burn things and eat them because he's an animal, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah, now he's a
passionate, like,
intelligent teacher.
Yeah, exactly. And that's very different. But it seems like he's trying to fill Beast's role, I think, in that way. I was trying to figure out who the girl who becomes Miss Thing is, like, you know, Johnny, the girl with the pink hair, like, what was her connection with it all? And I looked it up. She seems to be a brand new character, brand new to this.
The picture on the
I've
cover
got no idea about that one. I was wondering the same thing and wanted to ask one of you if you had a clue who she was.
No. I will say the picture on the cover is the weakest part of the issue, with her with the thing body and the pink-haired human head. That just looks bad to me.
Well, it looks ridiculous, and I was like, oh, God, they're scared to have an ugly female, but it turns out it's because she's wearing a Thing suit.
That's not better.
I'm just telling you that's the reason. I'm not saying it's better. Also, I should just mention, I love Medusa, so I'm very happy to have an excuse to have her. I've always been really interested in the relationship between the Inhumans and Fantastic Four. I like the Inhumans more than I like the Fantastic Four. There's something wrong with me, I know, but whatever. So I'm really interested in seeing Medusa around, and they all have such wonderful Jack Kirby character design still to them, residually, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it should be interesting to see, like, how the whole Medusa thing plays out, because I think there's just so many threads out there still with Black Bolt and Thing back and the Warriors of Light and basically the Inhumans, how they're going to be playing off of Earth in general, I think is going to be kind of interesting, because that's a huge question mark that's out there.
Mm-hmm. I always think I like the way what little they have of Medusa's voice. I don't like her written like a real person. She's not. She's like something out of a movie. She has to be overly dramatic. She has to sound like she's like from some sort of like Daphne du Maurier book. Like, that's just the way she's supposed to sound to me. She's like, it is very dramatic in my feelings. You know, like, it has to be like larger than life. Like, and Sue Storm is, whereas, you know, Sue Storm is like very much like a regular person you identify with. So...
Well, in the previous FF issues, Medusa's been in a lot of them, and she was like that more traditional. This like first issue is a bit, kind of a big shift in the way she's been portrayed in recent years. So,
so I'm not sure I'd want it either. So it seems a little too flippant for her character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that caught me, was that she was almost too regal in the way she talked, in a weird way, where she was like, you know, Susan of whatever the hell thing she's queen of now. I totally forgot what that world is called. But,
yeah, some fishy thing. There's some fish. Yeah, they have some various fishy people.
I know the story. The story is kind of cool. But, like, when she was introduced and talking through that, and I was thinking back in my mind of, like, well, she wasn't really talking like that, when Dickman was writing or where she was talking more just like a regular person. So it was a little bit off. But she should be. If she's, like, queen and the one that's speaking for the king, like, of course she's going to be like that. So,
she's a queen, and she's from either under the sea or from space. And her hair is sentient, pretty much. So I think she's supposed to be different from us. That's how I think, that's what's interesting about her.
Yeah, I like it. Like, overall, I dug it. I didn't have issues with it at all. Other than it was a little bit different than what came before. So
it was just different because the character was done so differently. So I'll probably be reading that book.
I think it also had enough continuity with the surrounding cast of characters that it wasn't like a big jarring difference. It was just a subtle difference that it was like, oh, well, that's not the way it's been for a while. So I think that's the way I took it.
Yeah. I think overall, I think it's really good. I had no idea how the hell they're going to sell that book because it's so off, like so different than everything else. I'm scratching my head as to what's going to happen. Plus, there's a whole thing. So we were talking about last week with the whole, you know, the Fantastic Four is supposed to be gone for 4 minutes, and they kept on emphasizing this. We're only going to be gone for 4 minutes. Well, you know they're not going to be gone for only 4 minutes. Otherwise, it's going to be the shortest comic series ever.
Or the most compressed comic series ever. Decompressed comic series ever. Sorry.
It could be shorter than the run they gave Sword, though. That's still depressing.
There you go. Aww.
That's such a good comment. I loved it.
Yeah. You are correct. That is the correct way to feel about it. I think, though, they could have it be 4 minutes and handle it if they handle it the right way.
I can't figure out what the right way is going to be.
Wow.
I don't think it's Scott Lang. I'm gonna say that up front. I don't think it's Scott Lang.
I'm sorry.
He's a mediocre character at best, and I just don't. It'd be nice if they did round out the team with all the other characters are female. It would have been nice if they had found a really smart female to lead the team, but Marvel just doesn't really have a character like that, and that's why it had to be someone like Scott Lang, who is, maybe the worst Ant-Man. It's just...
You're right, that's a very good point. Like, why is he in charge? Because he has to be the Mr. Fantastic equivalent, and those are all male. Like, wow, there's, like, a few female super scientist types, but they're all very, very solidly, like, medical doctors, you know? Like,
yeah,
Dr. Kavitra from X-Men, she's, you know, they should do something with that, but she's really not used that way. Dr. Kavita Rao is, like, a super doctor, but she's very much clearly, like, a doctor. Like, she, like, deals with people's bodies. That's what she does. Kavita Rao, right? And then, like, that's it. Are there any super science ladies? Like,
So my thought is, like, I'm actually going to defend the Scott Lang a little bit. So you need, and Mr. Fantastic lays out, he's like, I need someone that has a clue as to what I've been doing in case something goes wrong and we need to be retrieved. So I need someone who has, like, some idea as to what's going on. So it makes sense that he's got, like, there's not many people he can go to really do that. Plus, there's the him losing his daughter. I thought plays off really well. And that now he has to deal with a whole bunch of kids. And I don't think there's anything going on with him anyways. I don't think there's any other team that he is currently on. So he's a good character with some major plot threads that aren't being used or aren't being done with anything. So this can at least address those and maybe move the character forward a little bit. And as far as science characters, like the one I can think of is Kitty Pryde. And if you read the think it's the latest issue of Iron Man. Like, it's all about, I think it's the latest issue of Iron Man, or maybe it was A plus X, is there's a great thing between Iron Man and Tony Stark and Kitty Pryde. Actually, it's A plus X.
What? I need to read that. I need to read that. I've never bought an Iron Man book. I want to read that.
It's not. It's A plus X number two.
A plus X number two.
The
it's
the
really,
second...
really funny. That was one of the greatest jokes I've seen in a long time, in a good way.
I totally agree with you on the second part about Scott Lang. The one of the best things they did was write in the you know, grieving parent with the, all the kids. So that part I definitely agree with. The first part doesn't make much sense to me, because if the idea is to have someone that kind of knows what Reed had been up to and all this stuff, you don't pick the guy who's been dead for 6 years and just woken up. So that part bothered me a little.
Good point on that one.
But I know we're running tight on time. The other issue that I wanted to talk about in the Marvel Now is the newest issue of Uncanny Avengers. Did y'all read that?
Yes. The second issue?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, all right. So we'll try to get around it without spoilers. I'll say it's definitely, towards the end of the issue, is one of the most shocking images I've ever seen in a Marvel comic. It's just ridiculously extreme and powerful shot. And there's some really good stuff going on there. I've not ever seen the Red Skull quite used like he's being used in this. And it's really powerful stuff. And I think I would definitely recommend that. It may be the best, if not one of the two or three best of the Marvel Now stuff, is the especially the second issue, but the first two issues of Uncanny Avengers. Sorry.
For me, I actually disliked the first issue. I thought the first issue was kind of muddled and all over the place and not coherent. The second issue is much better than the first. And I think I know the part you're talking about, but yeah, like the towards the end got really, really interesting and was kind of fascinating, and I wish we could spoil it because I wanted to debate the merits of that as to what the Red Skull does. Because there's like some things where it's like, oh, that's really cool, but at the same time, I'm like, he's a Nazi. He wouldn't do that. But yeah, and yeah, I'll say the one thing that's really good about Uncanny Avengers, in the positive, to say something really nice about it, is it's so far the book that's really bridging the gap between the mutant side and like the non-mutant side of the Marvel Universe. Like, it's really blending it all together, which is good and needed. Like, that book has been missing for a long, long time. So, like, mad props to them finally, like, filling that gap. Is there any other Marvel Now that's being read?
I've read just about everything now. And just start the
whole
thing.
How many are there? That's a lot.
So the three I think that are the best so far that I've read, Thor: God of Thunder has like blown me away with both issues. I thought Avengers number one was really, really, really good. And then All New X-Men, all three issues have been surprisingly good. And actually, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens next.
So which new X issues are considered now?
All new X-Men, and then X-Men and the Wolverine. Wolverine and the X-Men has transitioned into the Marvel Now.
Starting at what issue? I mean, I've been reading Wolverine and X-Men. You know, I didn't notice anything particular now-y about it, though. So.
Yes, I think there's not much that's really changed between that, and that series is pretty set.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they didn't do anything quite as extensive as what DC did, so there's not really a relaunch here of the universe. It's just a new era, basically. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like what they're saying that they're doing. Like, the idea of we're not restarting the world, we're just going to show you a few places that are going to be easier to get into if you don't know any continuity, basically.
like what the point one project was supposed to be, except they never told anybody who didn't already read comics about it. So it was like that, except for this time they also didn't tell anybody who didn't read comics about it, but they made an intent like they were going to. So it was kind of like that. No, I mean, I like the concept if they told anybody about it. It would be good.
And I agree on those particular issues you mentioned, but I would right below those, the Captain America number one and Iron Man number one were both very good reads, I thought. I think I particularly like Captain America one just because I love John Romita Jr., and he did some pretty awesome work in this issue. Those are both very good. I think you could come into those issues as someone new, and you would jump right in. It's not like if you came in on like FF number 19, you'd be like, what am I reading? There's nothing here that I understand. Mm-hmm. Whereas Captain America and Iron Man, they're continuations, but there's new, you know, it's enough stuff there that's new and independent that they're good reads. To a lesser extent, Indestructible Hulk, while it was still pretty solid, I thought it was readable. I'm not probably going to keep reading it, but.
You know, I actually really liked that one. I forgot about it, but that was one I actually really liked too, and I'm not a Hulk fan.
Yeah. I was a big Hulk fan under Greg Pak, and I don't know that I've liked him since then, so.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, it's, I just thought the kind of the flip around of, like, Banner being like, you know, I've been thinking a lot. I want to do some good. Here's the deal was a cool spin on it. So
it's a very interesting premise and a new one for Hulk that hadn't been there in a while.
Yeah. But to me, like, I mean, have you been reading Thor: God of Thunder?
I read the first issue. It was well written. It's mythology stuff, which it doesn't grab my attention. So while I like that issue, I probably won't keep reading it just because I don't.
If you can grab the second issue, because I actually think that I thought the first issue is really, really good. I think the second issue is even better than the first.
What's it all about?
How do I even describe it? So it's basically looking at Thor in three different eras. And the thing that ties all three together is this thing called God Killer, which you learn somewhat about in the second issue. And it's this a being that's literally just killing gods. And it's all tied together. So it's a way of doing, like, tying in continuity or a story in the past really, really well. So there's, like, Thor back in Viking days. And it just starts off with this Icelandic god floating up on shore, and then the modern times, he goes off into space, and this world is like, well, we don't have any gods, we haven't seen them in a long time, and he goes on searching for them, and they're all dead, and then in the future, like, the first issue just ends where it's clearly whatever is going on is hunting him in the future, and he's it. It's really, like, how it's laid out is really interesting, and the second issue plays off of it even better. Like, it's so different than what's come before with Thor. Like, it's just mad props to it. It's really, really cool.
When he was in ancient times there, the oldest times there, had a very Conan feel to me. It was very much like, you know, Conan issues like 70 to 100, you know, that really key run that they had that was like their best-selling and best-written stuff. It's really kind of evocative of that. And the art all throughout is just, I think it's really, really good. It's some of the better art that I've seen in a while. Very, very good.
The R.C. Fad Rubik did a bunch of miniseries for Thor and all look like that. I mean, he's a hell of an artist. Just, like, gorgeous paintings. There's nothing I've seen of his that just hasn't been good. Really talented artist.
What was Jason Aaron writing before?
Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yep. He's the guy they put on all things Wolverine-related, pretty much.
Okay.
And then I'm trying to think what else. He was doing something for Vertigo.
Scalped.
Wasn't he?
I mean, he had Scalped, which was his own book.
Yeah, that was it. I was trying to think. I was like, it's not Northlanders. It was something else. Yeah, and he's a talented writer. He's one another one that there's very few things that I've read of his that I dislike.
So how are you? So, you know, I've never liked any. I've never purchased an Iron Man book. I've never been interested in the character in any kind of solo book. I love Kieran Gillen. He's like one of my favorite writers out there. So tell me what you guys are thinking about the new Iron Man book he's writing.
It's hard to go first.
I just say, let me grab the issue and take a look because I gotta. So what was that was? Is that right? Okay, so it's hard for me to take issue. The only one I read was issue one, and it was really hard for me to take it seriously because Land is the artist.
Yep.
And he's so offensive to me that it's hard for me to take the rest of it seriously. So, it was. You know, enough that it was mediocre enough that I didn't read the second one. And I got that confused. I said it was good earlier. I was totally confusing it with A+X, the Iron Man appearance there. So it was totally not the actual Iron Man issue. So.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah, the one with the part with Kitty Pryde, that was the good one. That's not the.
That's really good. I think it's well worth it. Pick up that A+X because of that.
Mediocre book, but yeah. Other than that one, it's been pretty mediocre, but that one's good.
And I mean, I think the Rogue and the Black Widow story was entertaining. It wasn't like anything that was time consuming, but it was entertaining.
Yeah,
I laughed once or twice. For me, Iron Man, it's good. Like I want to say, I mean, to the biggest issue is Greg Land is I think a black mark on it. Just to back up what Ken said is, like, the art kills me, and art on all the stuff that he's done kind of kills me. But overall, like, I think the biggest issue with it so far is that it's wrapping up storylines that were coming from the past, having to do with extremists before it's going to go forward to what's going to be in the future, which is going to be basically Iron Man in space, which potentially could be really cool. But, yeah, I mean, Land's art just, I wish it was a better artist, but it's that way.
And it seems they really...
For all of Greg Land's art flaws, like, you know, the O faces and the tracing and the lies and the betrayals, there's so much worse art out there, though, because that's just how bad so much of the art is. So,
yeah.
Like, it's harder for me to take Greg Land seriously because I know he's just copying stuff, but by the same token, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the other really, really ugly shit out there is copied also. At least Greg Land draws pretty hair. I will say that. The hair he draws is pretty and whatnot, but,
Worst of your every piece of the same people, though?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Isn't he the worst of the every female face is exactly the same people, though?
No, no one is the worst of it, because they all do it. They are all equally awful. I don't feel comfortable blaming Greg, saying Greg Land is any worse than everyone else. Already.
To me, that's my issue with his art, is that they all look the same.
They all
look the same. I mean, there's some stuff I really, really like, and I think it's good. But it's just too much looks exactly the same. Like, it's almost like a mannequin, and then you just switch the hair, and that's it.
I think that that's fairly normal, actually, unfortunately.
All of the women
I'm
in
sorry,
Greg Land...
I didn't mean to defend Greg Land. That was not my agenda, but I figured I should
women,
at least mention that.
All of the women in Greg Land books look like they're straight out of a White Snake video to me.
Nice. That's because he's classy, you know? So, that's unfortunate. But it sounds like you're thinking that the way Iron Man might be going, now that these pieces are wrapped up or whatever, might end up being good.
Yeah,
he needed a reboot. He needed a new direction. It was getting really repetitive, despite there being some good writing and some good art on it. It was the, he's trying to make money again. Oh, there's a corporate takeover again. And oh, he's fighting someone else in armor again. So it was getting kind of redundant. And I had stopped reading it, so maybe if they reboot it and do something different with the future of it, it could be more interesting.
Yeah, and overall, like, I think Iron Man's going to be part of Guardians of the Galaxy, which is so different. It could be good.
That's intrigues me. I hadn't read that yet, so that intrigues me.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that...
So he's going to be in the comics, so that way they can put him in the movie, probably?
I have no idea. I'm kind of fascinated seeing what the hell they're doing as far as the movie and the comic. Because there's been so many different versions of Guardians of the Galaxy, and, like, the one that showed up in Avengers Assemble was different than the last time we saw them, and I, at this point, I have no idea what's showing up where.
I hope it's the one we talked about last week, because that's my favorite by far.
I want Amit and Lanning's Guardians of the Galaxy, because those were awesome.
Yeah.
Am I correct in thinking that Guardians of the Galaxy included a scene in which... this one woman's girlfriend gets turned into a dragon, and the woman decides that she's okay with that, and that
yep.
that relationship can just continue as it had been as a romantic relationship, except with a dragon?
Yep.
Am I making
yeah.
That happens, right?
Yep.
Yep.
It was Moon Dragon and, I can't remember who the other one was.
It's a sort of a dragon, it's sort of like a dragon space alien, sort of a romance relationship. That's like, pretty visionary, you know?
To me, Groot is one of the funnest things ever. And if you don't know who Groot is, apparently he's in the movie, right?
Yeah.
I love
Groot. They were in the cartoon. I mean, do you guys watch the Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon?
No, I didn't.
Well, you should. It's not as good as Young Justice. Young Justice is insanely good. But Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon is very good. And it has Guardians of the Galaxy make an appearance, which is how I became familiar with the existence of Groot and Rocket Raccoon. They did not, however, have same-sex dragon-alien relationships in the cartoon, unfortunately. But overall, the cartoon's been rather good.
I am staring at my Guardians of the Galaxy toy box set, which I had to buy because it's got Rocket Raccoon and Groot. And the one thing I had to get at New York Comic Con was my Rocket Raccoon mug. I'm so looking forward to it. Just the fact that it's a raccoon, like the greatest tactician in the galaxy who carries big giant guns, is awesome.
Huh. So is he sort of like a role model for people's house pets?
I'm trying to train my girlfriend's cat to be like that, and so far it failed.
Hmm. Yeah.
I would be so happy if the movie does well enough that they do a sequel, I would be so happy if the sequel included the Cancerverse, because that was one of my favorite things ever.
What? Is the Cancerverse?
The Cancerverse was effectively a very original take on a Cthulhu-like thing, but it had its own like thing with it, and it was so well done. And the series just it crossed over various different series, and it just didn't last long enough for me. It was just so awesome of a concept. And in the Cancerverse, all the Avengers in the Cancerverse have their powers and they're pure evil. And it's so fun.
So what does that have to do with cancer? It doesn't have to do with cancer.
So they call it the Cancerverse because there's no death. It's just constantly growing.
And that line, all these things are undead or something like that, and their tagline is that life won, meaning that nothing dies. But that doesn't mean it doesn't get corrupted and dark and twisted and all that, because everything in the universe is, there's so many like Cthulhu references and H.P. Lovecraft references in there, but it's so well done and so scary and and evil Thor and all these people coming up against the Guardians of the Galaxy who are for the most part kind of not powerful, and so they're facing massive, massive evil of all the characters from the other dimension, and it's just so.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, to kind of give you how crazy and how much it played into, like, old school Marvel was, you had Thanos, who was worshipping death to the galaxy, and would kill everything just so he could be cool to his girlfriend, who was death. And then you had Adam Warlock, who was supposed to be life, and the one who was basically the antithesis of Thanos and death. So in this Cancerverse, like, Thanos was defeated and life won. And now everyone's living forever, and they're all twisted and weird. It's really, really cool concept.
Huh.
So, yeah, there's even a direct reference to, like, very Lovecraftian thing where, like, just the names of some of these things are so scary that it's like, you know, just the name creeps you out. And so, like, they borrow the name from Lovecraft with the mini angled ones. These, like, yeah, and it's just, that's such a creepy name to me. And it's so, I love Lovecraft. And then to put that in a kind of an original take on it in Marvel, I thought that was one of the best things they've done in years. So I loved it. So I'd love to see a movie version of that. I know I'm dreaming, but, you know, the idea that there would be a, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy movie based on any of that stuff, it was a dream that already was like, you couldn't imagine, and, you know, now it's happening, so.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, I mean, there's so many good stories that you could do with Guardians. I mean, depending on where a Fantastic Four reboot is at that point, like, I would love to see them doing Nihilus crossing over with Fantastic Four and Guardians of the Galaxy, and that would be so cool, too. Getting into the negative zone, and, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Cosmic Marvel events were, other than the very last one, Earthfall, every one of them was just brilliantly good in that run. So Earthfall was a little bit of a letdown, but, you know, they had such a good run before that yeah, I'll forgive them that.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's exactly how I felt. Like, everything else was so good, and then the last one was, you could tell that something was up, either with the writing or what they were allowed to do. And it just kind of, like, was a, oh, we need to wrap this up.
Huh, that's unfortunate. That seems like an easy way to fuck things up, yeah.
If you're looking for good reads, like, those trades are well worth the read. So starting with Annihilation and then Annihilation, Annihilation Quest, and on from there, kind of like the Guardians of the Galaxy run, and yeah, all of those are really, really good.
Realm of Kings, and, you know, what was the War of Kings? Was that one of them, too? Just, like, pretty much anything with a cosmic character after Annihilation is just good stuff.
Yeah, War of Kings is what leads the Cancerverse.
Yeah.
And the War of Kings also plays off into the X-Men space stuff, so that was kind of cool.
And that's the biggest one that ties in the Inhumans, too, for... Alana said she liked Inhumans. They're focused in that too. So,
who's writing that? Do you know?
What? Dan Lanning.
Yeah.
Sorry, say it again.
It's Dan Abnett and then Andy Lanning.
Oh. Okay.
Two people. That came out 2 years ago.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Maybe 2.5, something like that, 2-3 years ago, somewhere around there.
Realm of Kings was 2010, so I've just had that mini angled ones picture up on the computer, and it's just awesome. I can't go away.
Yeah, so there's Realm of Kings, War of Kings. It's all good. It's really, really good. It's one event to another event to another event that was all solid and made sense. Yeah. So anything else you guys want to talk about?
That's it.
No. Yeah, that's it. I guess our next show is going to be on January 7th, correct? With Erin Polgren is going to be calling in to talk about Symbolia, her awesome new comics journalism animated visual journalist comic thing for the iPad, correct?
Yeah, she's going to be on the 7th. I think we're going to, at least I'm going to do a show, and Kenneth, you're welcome to do the show too on the 17th. I think I'm still going to do a show. I know you're going to be on vacation. But I think I'm going to do something. I'm working on a guest who I'm waiting to hear back from.
Awesome.
Yeah, I can probably do that one.
Cool. Alrighty. So,
okay,
yeah,
guys.
Talk to you guys next week, or I won't talk to you. We'll talk to you in the new year. And best
talk to you later.
We're having Erin on, but I also want to do best of.
Yes. Happy to do best of. Have many opinions, as I'm sure you all do, which is why we're encouraging people to call in next time. As well
yes,
as we have
I hope so. We call. Need callers, people. Damn it.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep. Bye. Thanks for everyone.
Bye.